Okay, so Rashi, Shir for Parshas Kedoshim, in a much quieter setting, but a much more chaotic context, because this morning my son enlisted to Tzanchanim, paratroopers. So I wasn't able to daven in the yeshiva. I davened in a separate minyan. So I wasn't able to give the Rashi Shir, so I want to record it. Just a lot going on. The fourth-year boys of yeshiva have just returned from serving in Aza 7 months, and evidently I'm supposed to be their Rebbe, so a lot there. I'm coming to the States just for a day to speak over Shabbos. A lot going on. And obviously, Yahrzeit of Rav Aaron, Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaTzmaut are in the horizon. But the beauty of Shabbos is no matter what's going on around you, Shabbos is Shabbos every seventh day. Tamidim, Kisidram and Musafim, Kihil Chasim. So, despite, I have to apologize, please bear with me. I'm a little bit under the weather, haven't slept in a while, but I hope some of these ideas will be coherent and will help your Shabbos table, your Shabbos learning in the midst of everything that's going on. So, the Torah describes in Parshas Kedoshim the twin traits of, twin Isurim of revenge, Lo Sikom, and what we would call loosely bearing grudge, Lo Sitor. And of course, Rashi explains the difference. We all know the famous Rashi, quoting the Gemara Yoma. If, let's say, Reuven doesn't lend something to Shimon, and Shimon reciprocates and insults Reuven, refusing to provide any service for Reuven because Reuven denied him service, of course, it doesn't have to be lending an item, it could be any other perceived injustice or actual injustice. That's classic revenge. You acted towards me in a certain way, I will act towards you in another way. Now, what is Netira? So we all know what Netira is. Netira is not reciprocating, but maintaining a grudge, bearing resentment. Now, whether it has to be expressed verbally or could be an Isur Shebalev, it's probably only if you express it verbally. There's no very few Isurim Shebalev unless there's some action taken. That's why Rashi says, where Reuven doesn't lend Shimon an item, and then when Reuven solicits an item back from Shimon, Shimon is generous, offers, but says, I'm not like you. Eini kemoscha, shalohi shaltoni. Rashi says, zuhi netira. So I think we all know this Rashi. We all know the difference between Nekima and Netira. But the end of Rashi is what caught my eye this year. When I was trying to challenge myself to see new ideas in Rashi. This year has been going on for about 10 years already. I'm trying to get some of these ideas published, Bezrat Hashem. I'm always trying to look for new nuances in Rashi. Rashi says, Zuhi Netira, Shenoter, Ha'eva, Belibo, Afalpish, Eno Nokim. Rashi feels compelled to explain the term netira. Nekama is obvious. Nekama nun kuf mem is something which is known to us in all of Tanakh. Kel nekamos Hashem, yikom Hashem devei. It's all over Tanakh. So the three-letter root of nun kuf mem in Hebrew is revenge. But netira, lo titar, nun tet resh, what does it mean? Tuan Rashi means, actually, if we generalize, it means to preserve something, to watch something. Some who are listening to this year in 2024 are undoubtedly learning Daf Yomi. I'm a little bit behind my own Daf Yomi, trying to keep up. But one of the definitions of Ribbis or Neshech De'araisa is agar natar, namely profiting by holding on to money. Because you allowed the borrower to hold on to your money, the lender wants to profit from that. Say, look, instead of paying back 100, you held on to my money, natar, you kept my money for a certain period, so pay me 120. That would be the classic paradigmatic model case of ribis, model case of neshech, agar natar. Whereas we'll get to a little bit later that a shomer sachar may have to go beyond minimal levels of shmira. Lahachi yavi lecha agra. The Mafki tells the Shomer Sachar, this is the reason I paid you, instead of Gimel Mbeis, Ki Hecha Delevet Nitirusa Yesera, or about Nisiyah Daf Membeis, about Nitirusa for money in a box as opposed to the ground. So the word Natar means to watch or to preserve or to guard. What are you watching? What are you preserving? What are you guarding when you act with resentment in the scenario of Netira? The answer is maybe not so obvious, but very, very telling and very penetrating. You guard your anger and your resentment. The anger and resentment you felt 2 weeks ago, 2 years ago, when you weren't offered the service, when you weren't offered the benefit, You're guarding it and you're maintaining it. A person who commits nekama, so there's a quid pro quo. You're not on my side, therefore you will not receive my benefit. A person who is a noter, so he's past the transactionalism. He's willing. He's a generous person. He's not a stingy person. He extends his generosity even to those who haven't extended it to him. That's the definition of generosity of spirit. It's easy to be generous in a reciprocal way. It's harder to be generous to people ungenerous to you. But despite his generosity, he is preserving an anger, an offense, an insult. And it teaches us, this etymological, grammatical Rashi, teaches us a lot about anger and pride. We all feel anger. We all feel insult. We all feel affront. We all feel attack. We feel it all the time. It's human nature. You have to be Hillel HaZaken not to feel harm when someone says something negative or abuses you, not real abuse, but abuses your needs, your respect, your dignity, or of course, real abuse. And it's human nature, the way Hashem constructed most of us, is that anger comes and anger goes, and our anger flares, but we move on in life, and we move on to other things. But in some cases, and for some people chronically, there's a decision that's probably driven by pride not to let go. You just can't let go of something. I once heard a phrase, I forgot what it was, anger is intuitive, but pride perpetuates the anger. Anger comes and goes, and if we just let the natural course unfold, our anger will subside, our anger will flow out of our, and we'll move on to other things. It's the pride that perpetuates and that reinforces resentment. And that's what's happening in the scenario of Netira. Again, in the case of Nekama, there's a transactionalism in place of generosity. I don't get from you, I don't give to you. It's almost as if it's Machiavellian. I give to who I get from, period. A lot of times people have a hard time crossing ideological lines to give tzedakah. I'll be honest with you, I don't give to yeshivos that are not part of my world because I have very, very limited funds. I'd rather give to people who need to eat and need medical bills paid for, and also because I'm a Rebbe in yeshiva. So when a person comes collecting for their yeshiva, I'm very sweet to them. I inquire about their yeshiva, but given my limited funds for tzedakah, and even if not, I would want to prioritize my funds. But when a person comes to my door looking for tzedakah and handouts for basic rudimentary needs, it's not a time to say, well, you're part of my camp, you're not part, as if there were camps. You respond to basic needs. You respond to every basic need of a human being, no matter what need that person expressed, no matter where they sit. Obviously, there's prioritization in Yair Irchani, but... So this person who commits the nakama is very transactional. If I don't take, I don't give. That's one scenario. That's one profile. The profile of a noter is someone who's generous. He's willing... In fact, he's maybe... impressively generous. He's not just willing to give, but to give to people that have slighted him. And the fact that he's willing to give shows that in many cases the anger is no longer burning inside of him, or else he would be restrained in his generosity. But there's this deep inability to let go of affront and insult. And the sooner that you become Teflon and you let things glance off you, either short-term Teflon or long-term Teflon. Short-term Teflon means nothing effect, not nothing. That would be indifferent and apathetic and almost anesthetized to anything. But where things don't, you're not easily insulted. Kasha lichos. But even if you're rach lichos, are you rach kasha lichos? What's the language again? I'm just so tired. What's the language of the mission? Are you also, I'm sorry, rach lirtzos? Are you someone, okay, you get angry, but you let the anger go. The person who is resentful is a noter. He's preserving and guarding the anger and won't let it go. Okay, let me let this Rashi go. Let's move on to another Rashi. And the truth is, this is a Rashi that I've been toying with for years. And just somehow, sometimes you have Siyata Deshmaya, sometimes you see things that you didn't, depending upon the timing, depending upon a million different factors. When Rashi describes the Isser of Arla, so I always found like his articulation was very convoluted, very awkward. I was like, why does he describe this way? Obviously, Rashi is reflecting what he sees in the Psukim. Varaltem arlaso espirio. So why is the forbidden fruit considered arla? Arla generally means a covering. So for example, the covering on the male organ is an arla or an arel. the covering of our heart, Arei Leilev. All of the Nevi'im spoke about Arei Leilev. So there's a covering. Moshe Rabbeinu was Arel Sfasayim because the movement of the lips was so heavy and was so difficult and awkward that it looked as if there was some weight on it. So there's a covering on top. So Rashi says, Va'araltem Arlasa. Why are these fruits covered? They're growing, they're sprouting out of a tree, and you're not supposed to eat them for 3 years. In the fourth year, treat them like Netaravai, which is parallel to Maaser Sheni. So Rashi just switches the term Ayin Reish Lamed into the term Aleph Taf Mem, which we know, something which is covered, just to remind us. Va'atantem Atimato, Va'atantem Atimaso. Araltem arlaso. Okay, so it just switches out one verb for another, but keeps the grammatical structure. Yehe atum vinistam milahanos mimeno. The fruit should be covered and barriered from your getting any hana and from your partaking or consuming. So Rashi just doubles down on the question, why does the Torah refer to this as Arzal? Why is the image of not eating fruit conveyed by the optics or the image of a fruit that's covered and barricaded? The fruit's not covered, it's not barricaded, it's me. I have to be careful not to eat the fruit. Why is there this almost shifting of the experience from the person, the Isser Gavra, who would say in Yeshiva, I'm not allowed to eat, lo tocha, lo tochlu, which is the classic way the Torah says. Why doesn't the Torah just say, lo tochlu es perio shaloshanim? It always ricocheted in me. There's always like I was thinking about this. Why not lo tochlu? And it just hit me this year that by shifting the iser and the description of the iser from the person to the object, it presents a completely different view of this iser. And by extension, because every iser is a prototype for all iserim and conveys certain ideas about all iserim, because everything is a klal and a prat, but iserim in general. When we articulate non-partaking of something, Hashem made it usser. So it means everything's available to me, I have access, and I have to discipline myself, and I have to withdraw, and I have to hold back, and I have to make a siyag. And by describing an isser through a verb, lo tochlu, you shouldn't, so it means that the human being exercises abstinence, discipline, regulation, control. By shifting the description of arla, again, it's a fascinating description, because it's a verb, va'araltem, arla so, but you should see it. It's almost as if the Torah is saying you should see it as covered, because you're not covering it with anything. You should see it as something which is covered and respond to its being covered, va'araltem, respond to its atima and its satima. You're basically saying this is covered from me, from human use. It's not available to me. Now, it sounds like a subtle difference, but to me, there are two ways that I relate to things that Kadosh Baruch Hu made usser. One is I'm going to avoid it. Two is it's not mine. If Hashem prohibited it, it's removed from me. So, for example, if someone, let's say, has a medical condition and they can't eat particular foods, obviously it takes willpower and discipline, but ultimately it's not that you're making a decision. This is not something you should be eating. It's not something that is appropriate for your medical routine and medical regimen. So, obviously, there's human discipline. But to me, the seeing Yisurim only through the lens of the person who makes a decision, a moral decision, to withhold or restrain from something, it almost sounds arrogant and proprietary. You know what? It's all mine. I decide, based on my sincere commitment to Hashem, not to, as opposed to saying, once Hashem made something usher, it's not in your realm. It's not. It's very reminiscent of that Eben Ezra in Parshas Yisro about Lo Sachmot. How can you avoid coveting things? Because coveting and desire is built into the human emotion. If it says it's like the prince does, or the pauper who has no desire to marry a princess because it's just so unrealistic and inaccessible. It sounds like almost very artificial. What do you mean? The answer is when in this case, social norms and laws and regulations don't allow a princess to marry the pauper. So it's not even his realm of possibilities, not even his realm of imagination. And it's an interesting question. Do we see Isurim as something we want? And we can, and we should. A little reminiscent of Elisa Ben Azari, should say, I want to do it, but Hashem said, no, I don't even want to do it, but it's a little different. Or should I say, once HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it's us, it's just not mine. Not. We live in a world in which there's such self-empowerment and such belief in self and such ownership and entitlement as if it's all mine and I make a decision not to. As opposed to saying, which is lightened in Hilchos Brachos, Asur le'adam lehanos min ol mezeh b'li bracha, then until you make a bracha, nothing is yours, not even a cup of water, until you make a bracha. It's certainly not something which Hashem makes asur. So to me, shifting the description, even though the verb talks about the person, you should make something arla, treat it like it's covered and removed and disconnected and unavailable, it's a whole different way to view devarim asurim and machalas asuros. The third nuance I wanted to discuss in a different Rashi is the Rashi about Neter Ravai, the fourth year, you take the fruit to Yerushalayim, you treat it like Master Sheni, and Hashem concludes this whole section of Arla, Lohosif Lachem Tevuasoni Hashem Elokichem, that if you maintain this Isser, the din of Arla, then you will have abundance and Hashem will reward you. So Rashi quotes Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Dibra Tara Kineged Yetzahara, Shalei Yamar Adam Harei Arba Shanam Ani Mitztair Bochinam, Lefikach Ne'emar Lohosif Lachem Tevuasa. That Hashem is addressing a native and natural concern that people will have. I'm going to not eat the fruit for 3 years. I'll be poor. I'll be impoverished. I'll be hungry. So Hashem addresses that concern. Dibra Tarak Lashon Neged Yetzer and says, don't worry. If anything, the abstinence and the withdrawal will lead to greater wealth and greater availability of food. Now, there are two things in this Rashi, one general and one specific. The general issue is, of course, that as much as we want mitzvot to be performed for sincere and idealistic and noble reasons, sometimes we have to incentivize. So to put Torah doesn't say Hashem desired this and therefore batel ritzoncha v'nei ritzono and submit to Hashem's will. Hashem is promising us that, especially when it comes to, in this case not really tzedakah, but when it comes to withholding from financial profit, Hashem generally promises us that that withholding will lead to bracha, v'hiyei bracha. So that's the justification and the validation of external incentivization in religion. Age-old question, how sincere, how educationally, experientially, should we award kids for their performance? Should we constantly create a system of awards? At what point should we pull back the rewards? But the question that hit me is, why here? Why specifically this moment, lo siv lechem tvuasa? Not other mitzvahs, not other forms of tzedakah. I think the answer is because there's a unique challenge to Arla. And the unique challenge is the duration of 3 years. When we're expected to withdraw from something we desire in the immediate sense, sometimes we succeed, hopefully most of the time we succeed, sometimes we fail, but there's a bold, defiant stand. You want something, and whatever strategy you use, you avoid it. I'm not going to go into millions of different strategies to avoid chet and to avoid yitzhar, but you make that stand, you summon the energy, you clench your fists, you dig in your heels, and you stand tall. But what happens when it's 3 years? Slowly but surely your conviction erodes. Slowly but surely your heart wanders. Slowly but surely your mind plays tricks on you. And because of that, there needs to be external incentivization. Don't worry, don't worry. Keep holding your breath. Keep avoiding the Paris. I know it's very attractive. I know you're watching it grow. I know you're watching your other friends eat because, you know, their Paris have already exceeded the 3-year Arla limit, 4-year Neter Avai limit. And sometimes it's the consistency and the ability to maintain your conviction and your discipline across a duration that's even harder than spot moments of desire that you overcome. And think about times in your life or relationships in your life or challenges in your life which demand that stamina and perseverance rather than defiance and strength. Sometimes a little more tricky, the stamina and the perseverance. And that's what I think Rashi is telling us. That's what makes Arla a little more tricky, because you're asked to maintain and hold the line for years at a time, not just a moment here or there. So three interesting Rashis. One Rashi, let's see if I can find it again. One Rashi, I'm just extremely busy with a lot of things, let's pause it for a second just to find the three Rashis. Right? One Rashi about the difference between Nekima and Netira, and how we guard and preserve our anger. One Rashi about Arla being covered, concealed, and barriered from us, not just that you make a decision not to partake, but it is detached from you. The third Rashi that Hashem promises us, L'hosif lachem tevuasa. Hashem incentivizes because there's a challenge in maintaining moral stamina across a duration, not just one spot moment of moral courage. Thank you for bearing with me. Everyone have a Shabbat Shalom.